All right, the recorder has started, and so now we're going into NTI Galatians, and we're on page 327. All right, so NTI Galatians chapter 1. By the way, throughout all of NTI, when I heard, you know, the inner voice, I think you guys probably know, it actually seemed like different personalities in the different books, but I never knew who those personalities were. The only one that I knew was this one. This was the personality of Jesus. So, FYI.
So you still don't know what some of those personalities are?
No, I don't have any idea.
What made you realize this was Jesus?
I just did. I guess I was just supposed to know. Yeah. And in fact, the funny story is, because of that, because I went through this whole thing without knowing the identity, when I knew that it was Jesus, for some reason it scared me. So I actually, even though Galatians is like a really sweet book and there's nothing fearful in it, I had more trouble writing this book down than any other book.
It's a little bit, whoa.
Yeah, a little bit, whoa, it's a bit the man, yeah. Yeah, it freaked me out. So this was a very, very difficult book for me to scribe because I was so afraid. So it's kind of funny because you'll see there's nothing in here to be afraid of. Right? But it terrified.
Making a story.
And right? Mental. Yeah, it's a mental thing. All right, so here we go. Greetings, my fellow brothers. I come to you on this day to teach you the joy of who you are and to teach you the glory and the truth that is forever and forever true. Amen. I am the way and the life. I come to you on this day to clear up your confusion, for there have been many thoughts that have confused you until now. Do not fret over your confusion. It is nothing and can be easily laid aside when you see the simplicity of love as I offer it to you. Now, when that was received, that felt like a promise to me. It felt like during these six short books of Galatians that Jesus was going to give me something very, very simple. And believe it or not, even that scared me. Even that scared me. And I think what scared me was it was the belief that somehow I had to do something to hold on to receiving this voice and hear the results of that promise. So there was this fear that I would fail as the scribe and that promise would never be fulfilled. So it really scared me. Verse 10. I am here to please you because the words I have come to share will please you as you hear them and accept them from my very own lips. For this is the truth that you have resisted until now, but you are no longer willing to resist. This is why the message that I bear will please you. It is your message, and you are asking to hear it and know it now. This story that I have to tell is coming to you directly from me, in my own words and from my own lips. You have no reason to doubt what I will share, although you will be tempted to. I tell you, when you are tempted to doubt the message that I share, look in your heart, for it is written there. As you see that my message is also your message, you will realize we are one. And you will doubt no more. That also really, really scared me. Because, you know, what Jesus, you know, I mean Jesus, right? You guys get the concept of that, the big man. What Jesus is saying to me here is not only that there is no difference between me and him, and of course at this point I still perceived a large difference, right? But he is literally saying that we are exactly the same one. And he is saying, if you, you know, as I deliver this message over these next few chapters, and if you check your heart, if you really, really check, you're going to find this message already exists there, that it is actually yours. Then you will know there's no you, there's no me. All of that was untrue ideas, right? There's just this that we are, right? And again, at this point, I was in a much different place than I am now, and that terrified me. Maybe even felt a little, what's the word? Sacrilegious, is that the word? Or what's the other word? It seems like there's a word that starts with a...
Blasphemous.
Blasphemy. As I say, it starts with a B. Blasphemous. So, you know, here I am, I'm only a few paragraphs into this thing, and this is like terrifying stuff for me as the scribe. But really what's being promised here is very, very beautiful. We're being promised something simple, and something that if we look inside, we're going to recognize it. It's always been there, right? Always been there. Verses 18 to 24. There is a belief within your mind that hates you and judges you and holds you back from me. Now, that's an interesting sentence because it says there's a belief in our mind that hates us. And you know, a belief can't hate us. A belief cannot hate. So really what this means is it somehow, because of this belief, we have chosen to hate us. You know, like it's like you said, the mind tricks you. Because of this belief, we're tricked into hating us, because a belief can't hate, right? So the belief is more, we're bought into the belief, and therefore we hate ourself, our true self, and we hold ourselves back from it. There is a belief within your mind that hates you and judges you and holds you back from me. I know well of this belief, for I experienced it once myself. But I have been made free by my own choice to release the belief that isn't true. And now I come to you as your brother and your guide to help you do the same. That's the end of one. So one's just a promise, you know, just a promise of what's to come. NTI Galatians chapter 2. This belief that is in your mind is the source of all confusion. It is nothing but a belief, but a bush of confusion filled with thorns has been bred of it. This bush, which has grown tall and deep, has been watered by your own mind. You continue to water it now. But this bush is no longer thirsty, because it is beginning to die. So now you may cease the watering of the bush. In your ceasing, you shall be free. You believe in separation. Look around you. Everything you see, everything you sense, seems to be separate from you. The world is the bush, so that everything you see and sense is of the bush also. But the bush is what it is because the thought that spawned it was a misunderstood and misjudged belief. So again, obviously he's talking about the belief in separation, and it is interesting because if you're not in a spiritual mindset in the moment, because now I am in a spiritual mindset sometimes, I actually don't, even though I physically see things, I don't see them as separate from me. At this point, I'd never ever experienced that. So I would look out and I would naturally say, well, Tom is obviously separate from me. You know, I didn't have the sense that I have now of everything being within awareness, right? I didn't have that sense at all then. So then Tom is obviously separate from me. This socket in the floor is obviously separate from me. Even this shirt is obviously separate from me. And that's what he's saying. He's saying, look around and notice, you know, how much you really believe that you are this from the skin down. That's where I was in my thought process then. From the skin down is me. Right? Everything from the skin out is not me. The skin is the separator. Right? So, The story of separation is a long and confusing one, but it can be broken down into simple components that you will know and understand. You will know and understand them because they are familiar to you, even as you read today. So again, he's going to give us a simple version of the story of separation, nothing complex. The world is a world of judgment because it was spawned from judgment in a moment of confusion. The world is like its maker, being in every way like itself. It came from confusion, so it is confusion. It was made by judgment, so judgment is its king. Each one within the world feels justified in judging another. In some time, some place, or some very special circumstance, each one feels fully justified in judging. This is how each one makes a mistake. So the simple version of the story that he's giving us is not a new version of the story. We had the same version of the story in NTI Romans, so it's really like a review. The simple version that he's giving us is that the sense of separation comes from judgment. And then judgment results in confusion because, of course, you're believing that sense of separation. That is the cause of separation is judgment. And then what he's also pointing out is that we all value judgment. Even if we're on the spiritual path, we may be learning to let go of judgment in some situations, right? We're learning to accept this and to accept that. But he's saying, you know what? In some situations, you know, you still absolutely believe now judgment's justified. I'm right in judging here. You know, he absolutely should not have said that, or she absolutely should not have done that, or that absolutely should not be allowed, right? And he's saying this is where you're making a mistake. And, of course, by mistake, he doesn't mean guilt. He would never teach guilt. But he means this is why your sense of separation remains. This is literally why you think everything from the skin out is separate from you. It's because you judge and you value judging. If you would let go of judging, that sense of separation would literally die. Even though the senses don't change, the eyes still see, you know, a Tom across the room, but there's some sense of this awareness that you are and that everything is included in and a part of it. And so it's the sense of separation that dies, not the way the body's eyes see, right? It's just the sense. It's a sense of separation. Okay? So we don't, the funny thing is we don't really feel separate because we see separate. We think we do at first. We think it's because I see it over there, I believe it. He's saying, no, that's not really the cause. The cause is your judgment. So he's making this very, very simple. You have something to say?
Well, something helpful. Somebody said to me once, it's not what we see, it's what we feel about what we see.
Exactly. And that's like you saying the word sense. It's a sense. Yeah. Or an intuitive feeling. Yeah. So judgment causes the sense of separation, not even your physical senses. The fact that you see it out there, you hear it from over there, you touch it, that's not really what creates the sense of separation. Because you can know all of that is still happening within awareness. Right? It's merely the judgment. All right. So, verses 17 to 21. I tell you that judgment is of the bush, and judgment waters the bush. Judgment keeps the belief in separation alive. Now, I ask you to look at your mistakes and own up to them, not in guilt, but in relief. For the release you seek shall be yours through the surrender of your judgment, through acceptance, not judgment. The light of heaven is yours. So what he's giving us here, of course, is the answer, the antidote to judgment, and that is acceptance. And I don't know if you remember, but NTI Romans, that was the primary teaching in NTI Romans, and NTI Romans gave us a sentence to help us learn to let go of judgment and move into acceptance. And that sentence was, it is what it is. Right? That, you know, when you say it is what it is, you know you're being honest. Right? And it, you know, it is. It is what it is. And if you can really surrender into that sentence, you can let go of judgment of any situation and you can move into acceptance. Of course, where some people get confused is they think acceptance, it means approval. Right? And actually, acceptance transcends approval and disapproval. Like, there's not approval in it because there's not disapproval in it, if that makes any sense. It is just simply acceptance. So you don't have to try and make yourself approve. You just say, it is what it is. Right? It's a simple statement of fact. Wow, we may finish Galatians tonight. Told you it was a simple book. Why would I be so afraid to write this down? You know? It's killing me. It's a simple book. All right, so NTI Galatians chapter 3. I ask you now to rest, for you will be tempted to criticize yourself. But what is that really but judgment? Now again, remember the last paragraph of chapter 2, he has asked us to look at our mistakes and own up to them. And again, he's asking us not to do it with guilt, but with relief. He's, okay, I see I judged there. I see that was my error. Ah, oh, I see I judged that. That was my, oh, I see I judged that. He wants you to start noticing this, but he wants you to do it without judgment. And so what he's saying at the beginning of chapter 3 is, you know, you're going to be tempted to judge yourself when you catch yourself judging. So he wants you to be aware of that temptation so that when you see your temptation to judge yourself for judging, you can remember, you know, Jesus said I would see this. And Jesus said, it's not necessary that I judge myself. You know, it's really, I just rest, you know, learn to relax into the fact that I'm finding myself judging and just sit back and watch. That's really what he wants you to do. But he does want you to look, because guess what happens if you don't look? You just keep right on judging without noticing. It's kind of like the Course says, the ego thrives in darkness. Darkness means non-awareness, right? And so if you bring awareness to something, it's going to die. You know, it may take a little bit of time or appear to take a little bit of time, but it can't live in awareness. It can only live in non-awareness if, you know, if it's something that's not true. So he definitely wants you to bring your awareness to it. He wants you to start noticing, oh, I just saw that judgment again. Oh, I just saw that again. But totally without judgment. And for most people, that takes some practice, right? So I ask you now to rest. He's telling you how to do it. You kind of get into a restful state. I ask you now to rest, for you will be tempted to criticize yourself. But what is that really but judgment? Rest with me a moment and see the logic in the message that I share. Rest with me and know your own willingness. We are taking an important step. And I am grateful to have you by my side. Let me tell you what I see when I look at you. I see faith and willingness and love. I see a heart that is so strong, not even the heavens of your universe can contain it. I see a mind that is awakening to its own heart. I see gentleness through awakening, and I am grateful to have come to welcome you back unto your truth. And of course, that's there to comfort us and to give us the confidence that we are more than what we think we are. Because if we just perceive ourselves as this, I'm going to say weak person, then there's an idea that comes into the mind that we believe immediately. And in fact, I've heard many people state it out loud as a teaching. You can't let go of judgment. Don't even try, right? This isn't what we're being taught here. You know, this isn't what we're being taught here. And so he wants you to see that, you know, sure, if you were just this weak person, you know, this just, if all you were was this human being that you think you are with this mind, then sure, But that's not who you are. You know, you're far beyond the person. Therefore, you cannot judge. Right? And he wants you to realize that it's in your divinity that you cannot judge. So you need to begin to recognize that you are more than a person. Verses 10 to 14. It is through your willingness that you have come to me now. It is through your willingness that we will continue forward together. I am grateful for your willingness. It is the water of a different bush. It is the water of the bush of life, which is also the bush that is made of light. Now, do you all know who Abraham is? Does everybody know the Bible that well? If not, shake your head. No, no? Okay, then let me tell you about Abraham. Once upon a time, the Jewish people were what we tend to call pagans, meaning they worshipped many gods. You know, I think they probably had like a kitchen god, you know, that was, you know, a stone thing, and another god maybe that you would purchase and keep in your house if you were having fertility problems. And, you know, they just had all these different gods. And in fact, there were men who were god makers. You would go to the god baker to buy your god, right? You know, I'm sure the god makers made them out of wood or made them out of stone or whatever they had available. So, and this was the way it was. In fact, this is the way many, many people have started out before other religions have come. But what happened was there was a man named Abram who started to do something no one else had ever done. He started to hear an inner voice that said it was God. And Abram chose to trust this inner voice. And Abram began a very, very long relationship with this inner voice. Several things happened. Abram led his entire tribe on a 40-year journey that took him to a promised land, you know, which is Israel. Abram had a wife that was old, and she'd always been barren. She had a son, miraculously, who was named Isaac. You know, Abram had a very strong relationship with this inner voice God. And that was so different than what everybody else believed. I mean, everybody else believed that God is the stone thing. So in a way, other people would have perceived Abram as crazy. And, you know, based on everything he knew intellectually, he had every right to think of himself as crazy. Because he had nothing to justify this by. He just trusted it and followed it. And God gave him a new name. His spiritual name was Abraham. And promised that a great nation would be born from him. In fact, two great nations were born from him because he had two sons. His first son, Ishmael, was actually born before his wife had a baby. His wife, Sarah, wanted him to have a baby, and she couldn't. So she gave her slave, Hagar, to him to sleep with in order to have a son, and that was Ishmael, that son. And then later, through God's promise, Sarah, even though she was old and barren, became pregnant, and she gave birth to a son, and that was Isaac. So he has two sons. He actually loves both of his sons. I mean, there's no favoritism in Abraham. He loves both of his sons. But Sarah, his wife, becomes jealous of Ishmael and Ishmael's mother, Hagar, even though she initiated the whole thing. And at some point, she asked Abraham to send them away. And Abraham asked God what he should do. And God says, listen to his wife. Now, many people think, you know, what an unloving thing for God to do. But when we think what an unloving thing for God to do, we aren't looking at the big picture. Because what happened was Ishmael and Hagar left, and God took care of them. There's a miracle story about how they had no water, and somehow they received guidance to like hit a rock or something, and water came out of the rock. So God went with them, right? He didn't send them off alone. But Ishmael gave birth to what we now call the Arabs. So an entire nation came from Ishmael, the Arabs. Isaac, who stayed with Abraham and Sarah, he was the father of Israel, the Jewish nation. So all of the Jewish people and all of the Arab people came from Abraham. He's the father of two nations of people. And in fact, when we were in Israel on tours, our tour guide told us that they can actually trace that in the DNA. They can look at the DNA of an Arab person and look at the DNA of a Jewish person, and they can see that they have a similar ancestry. Where if they were to look at our DNA, a Gentile, we don't have that. So these people are all one great big family, which is kind of interesting because they fight tooth and nail. But they're really family. So if you think about the big story, it may sound like what a horrible thing for God to send off, you know, Hagar and Ishmael. They didn't do anything wrong. But really, God was sending them off to birth a nation of people. See, it wasn't a horrible thing. So you can see how our judgments can be so incredibly faulty, right? So that's the story of Abraham. And what you're going to hear as we move through Galatians is you're going to hear Jesus doing some reinterpreting of that story. Of course, he's going to reinterpret it to help us look at ourselves in a personal manner. But it will be the story of Abraham, Hagar, Sarah, Ishmael, and Isaac. All right? So Abraham is the symbol of birth, and the son that was born to this symbol is the son of light. This son was blessed through God that it may spread, as has spread, the light of the world. This light was not promised to one man, but to all men, as represented by the nations of the world. And this light was not promised to separate minds, but to one mind, as is represented by Abraham's one seed. So what this is really trying to say, and I understood it perfectly when I received it, is that, you know, there's the appearance of two sons, there's the appearance of two seeds. And in fact, if you really get into the politics of it, this story is the beginning of the fighting between the Arab and the Jewish people, because the Arab people say Ishmael was the true son of Abraham and he should have inherited all of the rights because he was the firstborn. And the Jews say Isaac was the true son of Abraham because he was the miracle promised by God. So they each claim the father of their nation as the rightful heir to Abraham, and you know, this is the beginning of the wars. Right? This is the very beginning of the wars. So what this is saying is there's one son. There's not an Ishmael and an Abraham, an Ishmael and an Isaac. There's one son, and all of the nations came from the one son. There's one seed. So it's actually taking away the idea that there's even two sons. There's one. And the reason there's one son, I mean, obviously, physically, there were two bodies, but there was always one purpose. There was always one idea in God's mind about populating the earth, you know, from Abraham. There was never a plan of two. The idea that there was, you know, two sons and one's right, the right son, and one's the wrong son, that all comes from human judgment. That does not come from God, right? The idea that Ishmael was a mistake, he never should have happened, you know, or Isaac never should have happened because Ishmael was already there, that all comes from judgment. That doesn't come from God, right? God had one plan, there's one seed, there's one son, no matter what it looks like. Therefore, I say to you, the many of the earth are one, and your willingness is one light shared among what seems to be many, but isn't. This is the vision I would have you see. This is the vision that will lead you to lay down your judgment. For as you see the many as one and willingness as light, you understand what it is you do, and you begin to accept the truth of what you are together as one. So clearly the story is being used as a symbol, because we're really only talking about two nations. We're talking about the Arabs and the Jews, and there's, you know, many more nations than that. There's the Chinese, the Africans, the Gentiles, the Indians, right? But this story of two nations that is in the Bible and very controversial in the current world is being used as a symbol to tell us the only reason we see differences and the only reason we see separation is because of our judgment. And if we can learn to look at willingness, both our willingness and the willingness of our brother, instead of looking at all the other apparent physical and opinion differences, you know, idea differences, if we can learn to look at willingness, we're going to find that willingness is exactly the same in every single person. And, you know, sometimes people misunderstand that if they think willingness is, you know, willingness to awaken or willingness to become enlightened. Because they say, you know, not everyone's willing for that. Some people don't care about that at all. But it's the willingness to be completely happy and to be loved or in love, lovable, right? Everybody has that. In fact, that's what everybody is seeking. Many people have not found the path that we're on, which is actually the answer. But even when somebody murders someone, why do you think they murder that person?
Should be.
Huh? No, really, think about it for a second. If somebody's going to kill somebody, why do they do it?
It's like it says in the Course in Miracles, if it's a request for love, and that person will give them the love, so in frustration...
There's some thought in them, if I do this, I'll be happy. Mm-hmm. That's the thought. So even murder comes from the desire to be happy. It backfires big time. That's not the right answer. You know, why do we go to war? Why do nations go to war? Because they think whatever gain they get from that war is going to make them happy, right? So if you start looking beyond the appearance and you start looking at the willingness to be happy, to be loved, to be lovable, right? Everybody has that in them. And you'll start to see there's no difference. No matter where you look, you can't find any difference at all. So he's asking us to focus our eyes on that instead of all of the appearances. That's focusing our eyes on the one seed. See, the willingness is the one seed. And that's what births the Christ or births, you know, our awareness of our true self. And everyone, even the rottenest person you can find on this planet, has that seed. We all have that seed. There is only one seed, right?
So the seed is the willingness to look for happiness.
Yeah.
No matter where.
No matter, yeah. Exactly. And it's the same in everyone. No one doesn't have it. Right? And so if you look for that, the differences begin to disappear. Also, compassion comes. Because even if somebody is, you know, making all the wrong choices and they're really going deeper and deeper into suffering, you start to focus on the seed. You start to focus on what they're really trying to do. And instead of judging the hell out of them for all of their bad choices, you start feeling compassion. Because you understand all they want is happiness, to feel loved, to feel lovable. That's really all they want, you know. So the judgment kind of falls out of it when you start focusing on that one seed that we all share. Verses 19 to 20. The truth of the history of the world is that it is the spreading of this light through one mind that seemed to be made dark by a moment of confusion. But it is the light that lives, and it is the light that is being watered. So it is the light that is our joy and our focus. That realization is representative of our truth. Now, of course, one of the most common questions in the world is, you know, if there is a God, why does he allow wars, pestilence, disease, child abuse, blah, 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 you know, right? Go on and on and on. What this is really saying is the only thing that's going on here is awakening, right? And the way that you could look at this is, again, everybody is looking for happiness, right? Of course. Everyone is looking for happiness, to be loved, to be lovable. But not everyone knows how to find it yet. So it's like all these different paths are getting tried out, right? All these, you know, sometimes horrible looking paths are getting tried out. But what happens when you go down a path and it becomes a dead end is that path then gets erased from your list of things to try. So maybe there are 5 million paths that can be tried, but every time a path is tried, okay, that doesn't work. And like things are getting erased. You know, you can actually see, if you look at it with Jesus, what Jesus is saying is, all I see is all these things are being erased, and it's getting everybody in closer and closer and closer to discovering the one thing that will work. He says, that's all that's going on here. You know, to you it looks like a bunch of bad things. To me, they're getting closer. All the time, they're getting closer. Right? Because there's one thing they're looking for. They know when they don't find it, and when they find, you know, then eventually they'll be on the right path. So it's a way of looking at what we call all the bad things in the world. This is the answer to the question you asked Bentino. Do you remember? Okay. It's the way of looking at all the bad things in the world and seeing they're not bad. They're a part of this progression of awakening. Everything. It's progression. That's all that's going on here. So I'm going to read this paragraph again. Verses 19 to 20. The truth of the history of the world is that it is the spreading of this light through one mind that seemed to be made dark by a moment of confusion. But it is the light that lives, and it is the light that is being watered all the time. So it is the light that is our joy and our focus. He's saying we're all focused on the light, whether we know it or not. That realization is representative of our truth, right? I ask you not to look at the world and be sad for what it seems to be. I ask you to look at the world and be happy for what it is. See there, within the world, the light that cannot be extinguished. See there, within the world, the evidence of love alive. Love your brothers for their truth, watering, therefore, the light that is the truth within them. So what do you do when you look at your miserable alcoholic relative who never makes a right choice and is rude to everyone and blah, 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 you know the story, blah, 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 blah. You look and you say, he's learning this, isn't it? He's learning. He's waking up. You know, it doesn't look like he's waking up, but that's what he's doing. He's waking up. And what Jesus is saying here is if you look at him that way, you're actually helping him. Because we're all one mind. So instead of looking at him and saying, you know, you miserable drunk, when are you going to grow up? And, you know, instead of all that, you say, look at him. He's learning. This is how he's learning. He's learning. He's getting closer. Every time he makes a mistake, he's one step closer than he was the day before. Right? And you stay focused on the seed. You stay focused on his desire for happiness. You realize what's really going on. You look at him through the eyes of Jesus. This is what A Course in Miracles calls charity, right? It says charity is looking at your brother as if he's farther along than he is, right? That's what this is, looking at him with charity. You see them, whether they think they're on a path of awakening or not, you realize they are. That's exactly what they're doing, they're awakening, because awakening is the only thing that's going on in the world.
So there's really nothing wasted.
Nothing's wasted.
But it looks like it's just people tread water, you know, standing in one space for years. That's what they need to do. That's what needs to happen. Yeah.
And you can see how that's perfectly non-judgmental. See how there's zero judgment in that. You know, you can look at the exact same person, the exact same story that you judged as, you know, everything about it, and now suddenly you can look at it without judgment.
Well, in fact, it's actually the attitude of having hope for somebody is even more helpful than, I mean, it's not just that it's not negative, it's positive.
And you also find that you don't need to interfere.
And that's a point where I find, you know, I go both ways on that one. You know, like, is it helpful to want him to?
You don't even have to want it.
Yeah.
You just realize that is what's happening.
Right.
You know what I mean? You don't have to desire it for him. That is what's happening. You see how there's no desire in that either?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you don't have to hope for
it. That point made that you make, and I get confused on that because it seems like there's an active application for love now where I can make something happen or help somebody along. And and is that helpful, or is it just, more helpful to just, what I mean?
Well, what Jesus is asking you to do here is just to see correctly.
Yeah, that is the love, isn't it?
That is the love. Yeah. Just to see correctly instead of seeing with judgment. And remember how Galatians started, okay? Galatians started by Jesus telling us that the one way we make a mistake is judgment. Now, the simple gift that he is giving us is a way to look at everything, the entire world, just like you asked Bentino. What would you ask Bentino? Do you remember your specific question? What about war? What about, do you remember? And he said, can't you think of a way to look at that without judgment? You're like, no, I can't. I cannot.
Right.
Jesus is telling you how you can.
Right.
And if you can look at the entire world without judgment, if you can learn to do this, your sense of separation is going to die. Because what keeps the sense of separation alive? Judgment.
Yeah, valuing it.
Yeah, yeah. So, and at the same time, again, you're being much more helpful to someone when you're not judging them. Ask Danielle. She knows, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is more helpful to you, me judging you or me not judging you?
Not. Good answer.
Yeah, but she knows this because we don't judge her. And so she knows what it's like to live in an environment with non-judgment. It is truly helpful. Do you agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's truly helpful. You never help anyone by judging them. So you're helping both yourself and your brothers by choosing to trust Jesus enough to adopt this point of view. The only thing that's going on is awakening. Even when it looks like this person is making the worst mistake in the world, it looks like he's hurting other people, right? He's misleading other people, he's manipulating other people. They're fools, they're following for it, right? They're awakening, every one of them. They're finding out this doesn't work, so they can erase that part. And every time they erase something, they get closer to awakening.
It's kind of like how, the older I get, and then I look at my mistakes, and I try to tell somebody else, don't do this, don't do that, and then you realize that
it's not
because they have to go through.
They have to go through themselves,
reach their own conclusion.
Yeah. Now Jesus does tell us in the Course that if we want to, we don't have to try everything because we can learn from someone else's mistakes. So we do have that option if we have the willingness. I can, watch you make your mistakes. Go, geez, okay, I don't need to do that. In fact, I did that the other day. I watched this guy from Sedona who, not that I was going to put you all in a sweat lodge or anything, but I watched the guy from Sedona who had the sweat lodge. Remember, three people died?
Yeah.
He's out of prison now. And I saw an interview of him. And he's actually now, he's very, very humble. This fall was magnificent for him. Because what had happened is he had kind of had a big spiritual ego. He thought he knew what was best for everybody, thought he knew the way, was demanding of people and all of that. And now he realizes he was wrong, right? He really was wrong. And he has fallen into a very humble position. But what I learned from watching him was, I don't have to go through some prideful fall to stay in a humble position. I can learn from his mistake. I can realize that if pride starts coming, that the pride is only going to lead me to pain. I can remember his lesson, and I can thank him for learning it for me, and I can step right back into humility. So I don't have to walk that path because he walked it for me. And this is what Jesus tries to tell us. He tries to tell us, we don't have to walk the path of crucifixion. Because he walked it for us. Now, many of us walk the path of crucifixion anyway. We say, thanks, Jesus, but I want to learn my way. But he said, you don't have to. I did it. I did it for you. You don't have to. Right? So we can learn lessons ourselves, or we can observe others who are choosing to learn it, and we can say, okay, I get it. Thank you for doing that for me. We have two ways to erase options. Right? Okay.
Experience is experience.
It's right. Whether it's mine or yours. If I'm wise enough to learn from you, that's great. Yeah, I don't have to follow your in your footsteps. I can see what happened to you and learn if I want to. Yeah, so verses 23 to 25. You are freed of your need to judge as you are freed of your belief in separation. You are freed of your belief in separation as you are willing to water the bush of light with me, which means adopt this way of seeing. Through your willingness, you are healed. Through your willingness, you are free. Through your willingness, the darkness of confusion is lifted and the oneness of heart is known. You and your brothers are one. I am one with you. This is our joy as you are coming to know. Lay down your judgment and welcome our truth. What is one cannot be separated, and what is not separate cannot be judged. Be willing to lay down your judgment with me. I will show you through the guidance of your heart how to seek judgment no more. And so that will conclude us for today. But if we're going to follow our path of doing an assignment each week, we need an assignment. And I would say a good assignment is to, when you notice yourself judging, and particularly here I think we're talking about a person for making what we perceive to be wrong choices or even bad choices or even evil choices. So it could even be someone on the news, right? When you catch yourself doing that, just try to look again and see that this person is only trying to find happiness, and what they're discovering now is that ain't the way. They're erasing one of the options. Okay, just practice that this week. Yeah, that's it. That's the assignment. So I'll go ahead and stop the recorder, and we'll take just a couple of minutes of silence, and then we'll have a short discussion.